Joining me in studio is Dr. Jim Wilder. He is a clinical psychologist by training. He is a neurotheologian by choice. And melding the latest with from brain science, right brain, left brain, neural mapping, all this kind of stuff, with psychology and the wisdom from the Bible. And it, can I just tell you, it all fits together very nicely. Proof of this is the very effective life model that Jim and his team have developed at dealing with those who have suffered from trauma and addiction and helping their process of recovery. Joy, the emotion of joy, the I'm so glad to be with you expression on a person's face plays a huge part of this. And so, Jim, and this is so tough because it's like, you know, describe World War II and use both sides of the paper, you know, but take me into the concept. Let's start here, where Jane Willard, wife of Dallas, years ago out of the Shepherd's House out in Van Nuys, sort of brought you into the idea and becoming aware of, well, what if you do bring Jesus into the counseling room where people may have been traumatized through an event, children, etc., and how do you meld joy and Jesus and the healing process? Because the thing, I think the test at the end of the day is your model, the life model, has been very effective at helping people, quote, overcome their trauma. And when you look at Jesus is someone who went through trauma, but he wasn't traumatized, or he went through suffering, wasn't traumatized. And yet so many people go through stuff and they're devastated, and yet others can go through and they're not devastated. And you think you know the reason why that is. So I know it's a lot to throw at you, but let's get back to bringing Jesus in to the counseling session and how that and why that works with the latest from brain science.
Well, you do bring us right to the point there. Why is it that for some people, an event is traumatizing, and why is it for that somebody else that a certain intervention is helpful to get them out of it? And we were really puzzled about that. We were fighting that back and forth for quite a few years. And so finding out suddenly that having Jesus' presence in the event helped people resolve it really got us curious, really, more than giving us the answer right at that point. Because you mentioned joy, but we didn't really know about joy at that time. We knew that about trauma. In fact, we were starting to everything from the trauma side. And the thing about Jesus, when we looked at it, was that he had been through some really bad things in his life. And as you pointed out, he wasn't traumatized by that. He was able to suffer. He was able to feel bad and continue to act like himself. Well, along comes somebody called Alan Shore. Dr. Shore is a psychologist, PhD, who has put together all kinds of different fields. And what he came up with was that at the center of the human brain, the thing that made it grow, the thing that made it develop, the thing that trained it to act like a human being was this factor called joy. Now, the best way I could compare this to you, for you, is that we're on kind of a water planet right here, right?
Okay.
And so everything on Earth, it revolves around water. There, you could talk about water in the economy. You could talk about water in transportation. You could talk about water in your health. You could talk about water, anything you want to, weather, you know, the whole thing, right? Well, if you were to think the similar kind of thought about human beings, what's at the very center, the thing that kind of makes all human things flow together? It would be this concept of joy. Joy is actually that experience of someone being glad to be with me. Now, if you think about it, someone being glad to be with me is what's always going to get me out of my troubles, because I can't handle everything by myself. You talked earlier about the people who are healthy and the people that are sick. We've almost abandoned that concept.
Really?
Yes, because everybody's sick.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if you've looked around
no.
recently, but everybody's sick.
No, I get it. That's why I didn't like the way that they came out, but that's about the best shot I got it. So improve that. I mean, what do I mean? Tell me.
Right. Okay. So what does the Bible talk about? It talks about the weak and the strong. Turns out that with all of our little sicknesses, and sometimes we're strong and sometimes we're weak. Sometimes the things that are getting us are getting the best of us, and sometimes we are in the overcoming mode.
Okay.
And so if you put together the people you know, and even yourself, some days you're going to be strong and sometimes you're going to be weak. Yesterday I had sort of a headache. I'm not on my best game, and today I'm feeling much better.
Okay.
And so we've got these different changes in there. And when you put the strong and the weak together, what is needed for that to be a good experience is joy. They have to be glad to be together. Otherwise, you get abuse out of it. You get all kinds of troubles out of it. Think about the human interactions you know. If you put a bunch of people in a room and they're not glad to be together, what's that going to look like? What's that business going to run like?
You know,
what's
that family going to act like? And I think we all can sense that.
Yeah.
When you enter in a place where you're not welcome,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we all sense it. I don't know how you describe that in terms of physics and chemistry, but it's palpable. You can feel you're not welcome, and then the converse, when you are welcome.
Yeah, even when you're having that sense of joy, your body actually does create some chemicals. And in fact, we're told that animals can smell oxytocin, which is one of the chemicals we create when we're glad to be together. They actually can smell whether we're glad to be with them. Which leads us to thinking about, if God created us to actually have dominion over the animals, he gave
right.
us this chemical way of communicating with them, who was going to be glad to be with them and who wasn't. But I'm getting off of the
point here. I love that. See, that's the bringing the brain science and the Bible thing together. That's the whole neurotheology.
Yeah, it's about creation.
I love that. I mean, yeah, who would have thought that, I mean, that's just one teeny capacity, but that makes total sense, you know, that we're wired in such a way that we can have partnership, if you will, with the animals, and that they could be able to pick up on that in both, you know, good and bad. That makes total sense.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, you might have different adrenaline than a given animal does, but the animals have the same oxytocin chemical that we do. It's, again, one of those odd little things that when you start to study it. But more importantly than that for our development is that this joy experience is what causes the human brain to grow. You're born with about a third of your brain completely undeveloped. And how much it grows and how much it develops depends entirely on how much joy you experience, to such a degree that we can scan your brain and tell how much joy you've had.
Whoa, go really slow. Wait a minute. Because I know, I've had two kids and I got a grandson. I know in the first 3 years, all the doctors tell you it's critical time for their development.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologists like you guys, you know, say it's key for them to experience love and nurturing and things like that. And you're nodding as I'm saying all this, because tell me the brain science development then. Tell me the story on that.
See, it's one of the things that's hardwired into us. One of the things that all of us recognize is a joyful response. It's the same across the planet for all races and cultures and faces. Everybody recognizes joy the same way. It's that neurologists say that to become human, you have to be the sparkle in someone's eye.
Aww.
And that is what trains us to really join into that mutual mind state. You see, now, when I'm in a mutual mind state with somebody else, and I don't know if you can remember being little and the world being scary, but when you had your dad's hand or your mom's hand,
yes,
you knew you could kind of like face the world.
Yes.
And I can remember one time we were out in the middle of the Andes and the train ran out of railroad track. There'd been a landslide and we had to go walk across a train trestle in the middle of the night in a tropical rainstorm up in the mountains, and I'm like about 4 years old, right? And I'm scared out of my mind, except my dad was there, right? So while I was holding on to my dad, I could walk across that train trestle. And he tells me later that he was scared
terrified
out of his
too.
Mind, you know,
right, exactly.
Way up there in the air. But for
sure.
me as a kid, this gave me the capacity. Now, I can tell you, if I had been there as a kid by myself, you couldn't have gotten me across that.
Right.
Right? That's that sense of being in relationship. That's what grows with joy. Someone's glad to be with me. Now, most of the time, we love joy when it's just by itself. You know, someone's glad to be with me. But just, I think yesterday we were hearing reports about a mother who was with her children during a tornado and she
yes.
lost her legs, right?
Yes.
Okay. But those children still have that sense of joy. My mother wants to be with me even in the middle of a hard time. Because she wouldn't leave him alone, right?
Right.
So even though it doesn't feel the same, they are much less traumatized, both physically and otherwise, by the fact that someone was there with them to share that experience with it, however terrible it might have been. And that is what joy brings us to. I won't leave you or forsake you, no matter how bad things get.
Now, Jim, listen, I got to take a break here, and I almost hate to break in, but the picture of you with your dad on the trestle, I kept thinking what a wonderful biblical picture that is. Jim and his team have developed something called the life model. And here's my summary, and Jim, you correct me if I'm wrong on this. What I think you're saying is the following, that in counseling for generations, we sort of know when people are getting more healthy and et cetera. And now because of the developments that we have in brain science, we can sort of tell the story in physical terms of what's happening with all the chemistry inside the brain. So begin there. One of the keys that you've come across via Jane Willard and now a whole bunch of evidence and trial and error kind of thing is when Jesus is brought into the counseling session, and the patient has experienced joy. They remember a joyful memory or something, and they plug into that. You plug in Jesus, the joyful experience, returning back to the traumatic event, the patient realizing that Jesus was present, and because he is with you, you can go through and endure that, that you're loved and valued, and he too grieves over what had happened, but that the healing process with him can begin. And that is the model that you have found wildly successful in dealing with trauma and addiction recovery. And it's not just some PhD has to do this. I mean, once the church catches the idea that we ought to be self-propagating recovery groups where we're ministering to one another with this awareness of how significant joy is, how significant relationships are, when all that's plugged together and we have what we call community in the most robust sense, then we're at it. This is what Jesus was talking about. And anyway, I'll stop there. Is that close to what you're saying, or correct me?
Well, I think you've got the general outline of things. What you're saying is verges on being dangerous on one point, though. I'm gonna get
no, please do. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. Okay. Because you see, the American mind is so set on the fact that to resolve trauma, you go back and you get into that trauma and you feel as bad as possible. Now, I used to scuba dive a lot. I don't so much anymore. But imagine this. If you wanted to help someone recover from one of their scuba diving traumas, you would take them underwater and hold them under there just as long as you could until, you know, their lungs were as bursting as they could possibly be,
right,
to see if they could resolve the trauma. And that's kind of how we've done it. Now, when you're down there, you're mostly just feeling bad. Now, when we're scuba diving, what you actually want someone to recover is you want to get them up to the surface and let them breathe some air, right?
Right, right.
Now, it turns out that for our emotional needs, this is what we need too. We need to get up and breathe some air. But what did I tell you was the air of human beings?
Joy.
Joy, yes. If we can't get back to joy, we're stuck. So if you want to resolve someone's trauma and you start at the trauma end, you're really going at a pretty dangerous way. That's why, you know, when I graduated high school, I was halfway through my education, 24 years of schooling and thousands of hours, all that sort of stuff. Before you would let me grab a hold of somebody and take them into a trauma and make sure they could come out of it alive. Now, that isn't the way your brain is configured. That was really the bottom problem. Your brain is actually configured because it wants to start with attachment. You know, it wants to be holding onto your daddy's hand. And until you got somebody's attachment, you know, someone's with me in this, I don't want to go any farther. And so that joy of having some connection with God, with Jesus, with other people,
yes,
was what has to come first.
All right, so wait a minute. The old model, and I remember, you know, all the hits on psychology and stuff, but it's all regressive therapy. They all take me back to my childhood and cry about my, you know, bottle when I was two or whatever. And the problem with that whole model, why it was not effective and successful, is because it was starting on the trauma side for you. It was taking you back to that event without any stabilizing joy factor. So what do you do that's different than that model?
Well, the entire model is different, because what was generally believed would resolve trauma was that trauma was all about going back and feeling as bad as you could feel.
Right.
Right. So you get in touch with that and you really feel miserable. You're going to somehow resolve the trauma. However, when you look at how the brain does things, it actually wants to process that experience so that it can answer one simple question. What is it like me and my people to do when I feel this bad? If I can answer that, then instead of being traumatized, I'm going to suffer and I'm going to go on doing the things that I was created to do. You got a dog?
Yeah.
All right. You ever seen a dog in pain?
Absolutely, yes.
And a dog that's in pain keeps acting just like a dog, doesn't it? It still licks your hand. It's still relational. Does all that sort of thing. And one of my inspirations was to say, well, I wonder if I couldn't handle pain just the way the dog does. Because the dog still loves me when it's hurting and it still wants to be with me. But somehow when human beings get into pain, they forget all about their relationships. They just like, poof, they're, make it stop, make it stop.
Yeah, or they isolate horribly.
Yeah, and this is actually what the back of your brain does. When you scan someone's brain who's been traumatized, it has gone to the back of the brain, back there in the fear circuits, and all the fear circuits are lit up going like, make it stop, make it stop. Doesn't think about relationships, doesn't think about what's important to me, doesn't think about acting like myself. All of that's at the front part of your brain, up in your brain's joy circuits and centers. So if we want to start resolving a trauma, we want to start by getting a sense of joy and anchoring ourselves to that. Now, if you think about Christians or family or anything you want to be a part of, you want to be a part of a joyful community, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it should be a real hint to us that as soon as we lose our joy, we're on our way to something bad happening.
Right.
Right. If we were communities that were used to living in joy and relationships and parents and children that were used to living in joy, that's how we would start and handle the problems that come our way. We would say, oh, well, we're going to start with some joy. We're going to be glad to be together. You know, if you think of yourself as a parent, you're going to have your child up on your lap, right? With your arms around them. And now we'll talk about that bad thing that happened.
Yes.
Until you're glad to be here, where, you know, this is the spot where we really can face all these things. You don't even want to freak them out by bringing up the bad stuff. And in counseling, we've traditionally done it just the other way around. We just get you into whatever's the worst thing that's going on. And then we say from there, let's see if we can find where God is. It's actually where you have the worst reception. See, now, we discovered that trauma is mapped in your brain. You activate a certain circuit in your brain, and trauma will come back to you.
Mm.
It's like, you remember that. You know, it's
not
too surprised that it's mapped in there. We can actually scan around and say, oh, look, there it is. But, you know, the interesting thing we never thought about is that our relationships are also mapped in our brain, you see. If I destroy a part of your brain, you won't remember your wife. You won't remember your kids. You won't remember your relationship.
Amnesia and stuff, right.
Yeah. Well, there's this famous story about the man who mistook his wife for a hat because the part of his brain that recognized her as a wife or a human being was gone. And so he could see she was something from around the house, but couldn't remember exactly what, thought must be his hat, and tried to put her on his head, you know. Monkeys who've had that part of their brain damaged, it's up in the cingulate cortex, can't recognize their children as little monkeys. They'll try to sit on them like a rock or something like that. They don't know what it is. But
So Jim, hold on. Wait. I feel like I don't want to get so far in the details here. So you've seen all of this in the development of a brain, dealing in trauma and recovery and all that, and the chemicals and where they're at and all that kind of stuff, which I think is fascinating. Because it's confirmation on the way in which God designed this to function. And I've been promising to take phone calls here, and I'm going to do that here in a moment. But you have found a way to bring Jesus, allowed Jesus to be present in the counseling session. It's rooted in joy.
Right.
And this is the reverse model from what traditional psychology has taught us on how to help people deal with trauma.
Right, and to get back to your point earlier, if you stay in joy and connected with others, you can face anything that comes along your life. But you don't have to be a trained professional to do that. You can stay connected with others and talk about the things that have traumatized them and find Jesus in that experience.
Well,
that is the life for the church.
Jim, this is so, I mean, my mind's bursting here. My brain's bursting here. My mind too. On connections. I'm thinking mob psychology, gang psychology. You know, they're so brave when they're all a big gang, you know, but one at a time they're cowardly. Mm-hmm. That we're able to do things as a group where we have sort of a group synergy and courage and, you know, kind of thing, as opposed to being individual. That if we know that we have a loving family or a loving spouse or for my kids, or that gives us a sense of strength. And you're saying that you know the brain chemistry behind that.
Yeah, yeah. It's
which
an
is
actual mutual mind state that strengthens you. I mean, you can do more in a mutual mind state than you can do by yourself. Absolutely. And Jesus will have that mutual mind state with you just like the people that love you.
All right, 888-995-5552. And again, I apologize for those of you that have been on hold for so long. Let's go to Barbara over in Georgia, as in the state of Georgia. Barbara, welcome to the Frank Pastore Show. Hi. So what do you think about all this?
Well, I know all about this.
Why do you know about this?
Because I've been walking right along with Dr. Wilder since back in the 90s, and I'm so excited that he's getting to get it on your show where your listeners will be able to look into the life model.
All right, so
and hopefully take the training.
All right, so Barbara, the training. Yeah, we haven't even mentioned that. So Barbara, what has it meant for you on the life model? What difference in your life has it made?
Well, I have a whole list of things. I'll just tell you briefly. The first thing that I learned was what to do with pain to keep from avoiding it and to learn how to suffer well, as Jim calls it, with the joy capacity. I've learned how to calm myself by little physical exercises that they teach us.
Mm.
I have written a book for parents, because after I learned how the brain works for the joy, I wanted to do prevention. I got
right.
a passion for prevention. Let me teach parents how to do this while their children are young, so they will, have that love and that nurturing and that joy building. And I also do prayer counseling with the Emmanuel process, where you bring Jesus into the situation first and begin with joy, and I see him come and meet people right before my eyes. And what's so cool is that you don't, as he's been saying, you do not have to have formal training as far as a degree.
All right. So what of the traditional model of how psychology has been done for the last 200 years? Is not as effective as it could be because it's fundamentally wrong regarding the structure of the human soul. What if we separated the human person in all these little boxes, and they're not really in little boxes like that? What if Jesus cares about every element and every aspect of your life, and especially your relationships, and especially the joy that you have in working with him in community with the Father and the Holy Spirit and other believers against all the evil in the world? I mean, what a concept. What if Jesus were brought into counseling sessions and invited to participate, and the counselee was fully aware of the presence of Jesus being involved in that whole process? And as Dr. Wilder was just talking about, what if we come at it not from the trauma side, but from the joy side? Just like when a trauma happens to a little child, they want to run back into mommy or daddy's arms and get that joy capacity filled up again so that they can address, the boogeyman or the bad thing that happened at school. We all know that. As parents and grandparents, we intuitively know that. And yet as an adult, somehow we've forgotten that, to run to our Heavenly Father and to go back to that joy and get that joy bank account filled up to address the trauma and the yuck of our life. It's not that yuck isn't going to happen. Of course it's going to happen. But there are people who endure bad stuff, and they're traumatized and devastated by it and incapacitated and isolated and all that kind of stuff as a defensive mechanism. Then there's people where yuck happens, and they're just sort of suffering and enduring through that, but they don't lose their joy and they don't lose their relational capacity. It's called the Life Model. Go to lifemodel.org, get more information. It's just fascinating to me. I promised phone calls. I'm going to go back to those. 888-995-5552. Let's go to Daryl in Kansas, of all places. Daryl, welcome to the Frank Pastore Show. So, Daryl, what do you think of all this?
Well, the best way I thought of describing it is, have you ever been working a puzzle and you're hopelessly stuck, and then all of a sudden you find one piece and turn it and it falls in place and you can see the picture, and then all of a sudden all the other pieces start coming together rather easily and clearly?
Yes.
That was my experience when I was introduced to the Life Model back in, I believe it was 2006, and started connecting, reading Jim's stuff and connecting with Jim. We run a ministry running a ministry for men who are addicted to pornography and sexual addiction issues. And, there's a lot of Christian books, a lot of things written Christian and secularly, but it was just missing some real key elements. And what was missing more than anything was this concept of joy and relationship and really a clear understanding of how the brain works. And so when I found Jim's stuff and the Life Model stuff, then I started writing a whole new curriculum for my men who are wrestling in this arena, and the results have just been astoundingly different.
Really?
Yeah, we have, for example, I actually skipped out on group tonight to do this phone call, and you think of a group of, we have 20 men show up for a sexual addiction recovery group. But if you walked into our group and didn't know what was going on, you would be shocked at what it is. Because the guys are joyful, they're glad to be together, they're laughing, and the relational component that that we've learned from the life model and from scripture and other places has just been transformational in ways that allow us to be very intentional about creating that dynamic.
So, Daryl, you're having wonderful success at dealing with something as common as sexual addiction with using these principles. And I don't want them people to get the idea of some kind of, you know, wacky idea from Venice Beach or something. It's biblical wisdom with the latest technology and awareness that we have from brain science, how the brain actually works, blending them together, and it works. And you're having success there in Kansas.
Yeah, we're having success in Kansas, not just Kansas. I now have, you know, from the manual I've written and our website and other information, I have missionaries from all over the world, people from all over the world who contact me all over the country. And it's just continuing to spread because of how effective it is and because it removes so much of the shame. You know, anyone who's wrestling with a pornography addiction, that's just one of the core things. They just feel so horrible about themselves.
Right.
But then when they encounter Jesus meeting them in that place, for example, you know, just one story of a man I led in Emmanuel prayer, he actually experienced Jesus meeting him in his most shameful place of being in a strip club. And what Jesus told him in that moment was so life-changing. He told my friend, he said, in reference to one of the women that he was thinking of, he told him, what you need is not her, but me. And how biblical is that?
No, totally.
And yet, how transformational was it for a man to experience Jesus not telling him what a horrible wretch he was because he was in this horrible place?
Right.
But to say, and I left out the real important part, he said, I know you're here because of how much you hurt.
Oh.
But what you need is not her, but me.
Oh, wow. Okay, Daryl, listen, I want to go back to Dr. Wilder because it's sort of bad to be talking about the guy when he's actually sitting in front of you. So, Jim, Daryl's story about helping those dealing with sexual addiction and recovery. Explain how that works. Why, I'm going back to what you said earlier, rather than starting on the trauma or the shame side, start on the joy side, how did that work for Daryl?
Well, let's start out by saying that Freud was wrong. Freud said that sex drive was the thing that was kind of the most powerful thing about human beings. Actually, it isn't that you have such a drive for sex. You have a drive for joy, and people will actually have sex in order to try to get joy. In fact, we wouldn't have such a problem with contraception and abortion, all those other issues, if there weren't all these people trying to have sex with other people so someone will be glad to be with them. And, you know, that's how it becomes a commodity. We actually are looking for somebody who wants to be with us, to be glad to be with us. So when you find out that, in fact, your deepest longing is to have someone with you, then suddenly that transforms the whole thing with pornography. I mean, pornography in itself is like being taken to a banquet, right? And you're shown all the food, but you can't actually eat any.
Right.
I mean, you're not really getting your needs met here, because what we really need is some kind of person to really love and care about us. And when we lose hope for that, we get into the whole thing of finding something else that'll do it for us, whether it's chocolate or pornography or shopping for shoes.
But see, it starts, I mean, the aha for me is it starts in the joy. And it's just like Daryl said, it's mm-hmm. as Jesus telling him, you're here because you're hurting. Mm-hmm. It's not her that you need, it's me. And if we brought that awareness into every situation, whether it's dieting or whatever, it's that awareness. But how, Jim, of course, the key is how do you get people there?
Oh, that's the key, because the way that we typically do it is that we tell people what Jesus would say. And that absolutely drives people right up a tree. I mean, it's
thank
like,
you.
There's no more unhelpful way to go about it than to try to say what God would say if he was here. So the actual thing is, how do we get our relational circuits back on? Your brain actually has relational circuits in it that help you to perceive a relationship. So when they're off, and in fact, this happens to me when I'm working on my computer. I'll get out of my relational mind and I'll get into my problem-solving mind. I'm working on my whatever this project is. My wife walks in and I look at her like, what are you doing here and why are you causing me a problem?
Yes.
Because, you know,
right.
I'm not in a relational mind, right?
Right.
So what she does, she's brilliant about this stuff. She walks in and she stands there and just waits. and I realize, okay, there's somebody there, and I'm supposed to, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to like them. Yeah, this is supposed to be one of those reasons for working at home makes it even better. And so my relational circuits wake up. I look at her with a smile, and now we engage with each other, right? So inside your brain, there's this part also that wants to wake up and look for who is around here to talk with me. The secret to being able to help people in this healing process is to help them get that relational circuit back on. And the simplest word we have for that is the word for appreciation.
Mm.
I could talk about a lot of brain science. We don't have a lot of time for it. But we've summarized it in that if your relational circuits are on, one of the things you can do is you can feel appreciation. If they're off, you can't feel appreciation.
Give me an example.
All right. If I'm annoyed and my relational circuits are off, and somebody brings me, let's say my granddaughter brings me this cute little card.
Okay.
I look at it and say, sort of like, what am I supposed to do with this card, right?
So right.
It just doesn't, has no flavor in it, right?
Okay.
But if I'm feeling appreciation, I just stop and even take a sip of coffee, and I go, that's good coffee.
Okay.
Then I turn around at this card, I have a different reaction to the card, because I'm going, oh, this is cute too. And there's this thing about appreciation. As soon as you feel something you really appreciate, like this is a great sunset or this is a really nice restaurant, what do you think? You want to bring somebody right there with you, don't you?
Right.
Yeah. So it's the simplest test you could possibly run for whether or not your brain's relational circuits are on. If you look at something and it's got, you just can't remember. In fact, you think back about it. If I think about the things I appreciate and I like, I know that I like holding my grandkids, but right now I'm so irritated that if I think about that, it's just like I don't even want to think about that.
Right.
I know I've lost my relational circuits.
All right, so I got to do a break here and more calls. But so Jim, are you saying that you can be so traumatized that your relational circuits get shut off, even to God?
Yeah.
Oh wow. All right. So when a person is traumatized, give me some brain science here. That's the right side, right? That's the relationship side,
that's
and that
right.
Shuts down.
It shuts down. Mm-hmm.
And so a way
and
to...
the worse of the trauma gets, the farther it shuts down.
So what we've got to do to heal the whole person, we've got to access the right side, which is the relational side, and especially with God's presence. And the key to accessing that relational side is joy and appreciation.
That's right.
Welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show. Dr. Jim Wilder is joining me in studio. He's a clinical psychologist. His interest is in brain science. And his higher interest, though, is helping the body of Christ become a self-propagating recovery area. You know what I mean? Where we're learning to help one another. Now, I know that sounds ethereal and sort of wishy, but with his background in psychology and helping those that have dealt with trauma and addiction and abuse and all that, and the fact that he trains other psychologists how to do this stuff, and the fact that it's a new model based upon the most recent, latest brain science on how the right brain and the left brain work and the connections and how they need to work together and all that kind of stuff. It's just fascinating. The website is lifemodel.org, and I encourage you to check it out. Jim, one of the things, and the great question that was mentioned a minute ago, was we've been talking a lot about dealing with trauma and addictions and stuff, but what if they haven't been? You know what I mean? I'm thinking a lot of guys, if I were focusing on guys, busyness, you know what I mean? Or just get so sucked into just the feeding the dragon every day that their relational circuits get shut down. And as you've explained, if your relational circuits are shut down, you're not bonding with other people. You're not capable of bonding with other people. And I'm thinking, especially in L.A., we've got all these distractions. So how do we become more aware of all this, Jim?
Well, you remember what we said about if we could scan your brain, we could find out how much joy you've had in your life.
Yeah.
And
your whole life.
In your whole life, yeah. I mean, it's like your muscles. I mean, you work out, we'll have a look at them outside, right? We can say how well you've built up
really?
Your physique. Yeah.
You can scan the brain and see that.
Yeah, of course, because your brain also has to grow. I mean, the more you use it, the more it grows, the more strength it has, the
amazing.
More capacity it's got. So, you know, a lot of people say, I've never been traumatized. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, something bad can happen to you. You can get mugged. You might not get traumatized by it. But what will affect you for sure is if you don't get enough joy in your life. You don't get enough joy in your life, you're going to be looking for something that's going to make you feel good. And we've got an awful lot of people looking for something that's going to make them feel good.
Right.
And what happens is then very quickly when we get into our life, we lose the interest in relationships. We just get focused on problems and stuff like that.
So, what happens to kids if they don't get their joy tank filled up early on?
Well, what you should find is that kids that don't get a lot of joy are going to have increasing levels of depression. And what we see now is a lot of kids are starting to start on Prozac and medications like that when they're 3-4 years of age. You're going to find people developing autistic spectrum kinds of disorders. Now, I'm going to be real cautious when I say that, because right away somebody's going to say, oh, you mean my kid is getting autistic because they didn't get enough joy?
Right.
Right. Okay, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying, though, is that as a culture, when you practice less and less joy, the ability to connect to other people and to have a sense that we're doing this together starts to really drop. And people start to act as though they were autistic. It's like, you know, I'm just going to get my sense of connection from texting as opposed to getting it from actually interacting with other human beings.
All right, Jim, there's like 3,000 areas I want to go into, but we're out of time. I got to have you back. We'll talk further about this. But I'm thinking, if you can measure the joy tank, and I don't know what term you use, but tell me.
That's a good one. We call it the joy bucket sometimes.
Okay, all right. So if you can measure the joy tank in a person by whatever the brain scan is, what that really also indicates is their ability to endure stress and difficulties and challenges in their life.
Now you're exactly right on. Yeah.
See, and so I'm thinking maybe the best thing as takeaways, all right, as parents, make sure the joy tank in your kid is filled so that your face lights up when they walk into the room and the twinkle that comes into your eye involuntarily is present whenever you're with your children, and that their joy tank is made full, that your spouses, guys, when you get home tonight, fill up your wife's joy tank. Light up her life. Be fully present, not just with your body, but with your mind. Be present when you get home and fill up that tank.
Even if you have to stay in your garage for like an extra 30 seconds, two minutes, just to say, let's just quiet down here until I'm ready to enter the house with a smile. Then I'm going to start with building joy every place I go. And sometimes just take a little breather, then you're ready to go at it. That's why we've kind of called our whole center of our ministry Equipping People with the Skills to Thrive, because it's basically teaching people as simple as that. How do you go about really spreading joy every place you go?
Well, and the Bible talks a lot about the joy. Jesus addresses joy issues. In fact, I encourage people to do a word study on that sometime. Jim, the website is lifemodel.org, and there's a bunch of resources there that people can avail themselves. And again, one of the huge points that you made today, the takeaway for me is when trauma happens to us, our relational circuits shut down. Those are on the right side of the brain. And if you have significant joy in your life, you can sustain a lot of hits on your right side.
Absolutely.
If not, you're extremely vulnerable. And if someone has been damaged and their right side is shut down and their relational circuits are off or damaged or wounded or empty because of whatever reason, maybe their joy tank is empty, then what we've got to do to heal that person is we've got to reignite those relational circuits on the right side. God is involved in this whole thing, because your relational circuits on the right side can be so shut off that you can't even sense God. And so we got to address that situation, get into that, start from a joy strength mode, fill up that bucket again, and then invite Jesus in the process, the whole Emmanuel, God with us process. And the healing has begun. I'm amazed by this. The website, again, lifemodel.org. There's a book by that name, a bunch of resources. And Dr. Wilder, I can't wait to already have you back.